What would happen if we chose to really tell the truth about ourselves? I'm not saying that it's true. I'm saying that it's my truth.
You're listening to Hammered.
Getting back into the groove of working after being on such an experience in Greece, it was kind of hard to transition back to that work world. And we had left a project that I had to return to, and for a client that I kind of called Vodka Vicky, and it was a very, very stressful job. And the guys that had been working with me, Timo and Miguel, Edvin, I had paid them in advance. Basically, I didn't pay them in advance. I paid them to keep them because, you know, I was going to be gone almost 2.5 weeks. And there's no way that they were going to just hang out and wait for me to come back. And so I sat down with them and I said, listen, I know this seems crazy, but I'm going to pay your salary for 2 weeks so that I can go away. And all that I ask is that you be here when I return. And they were very excited. And I don't think anybody had ever done anything like that for them. And it wasn't like I was doing this for them. I was doing it for me because I knew that when I returned, I had this massive project that I was going to have help with. And so they were there when I returned, and we went and we finished up this project for this very high maintenance person. And I think what was disturbing is that after going away to a country where you don't see as much of that, I mean, we saw some of it in Mykonos, but overall, the vibe is people come together from all over the world and are visiting, and usually people are in good spirits and vacation mode. So you don't see a whole lot of the entitlement going on, but coming back to this was like a slap in the face, you know, a slap back into reality. Is this Jill? This is the life that you have, and this is what you have to show up to every day and navigate with these people. And so I was working for a general contractor, and, you know, we got along pretty good, and I really liked her. And I know that she was under a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. And so I was trying to accommodate and jump through every hoop that I could for her. And the next project we were going to do was a very, very big one. And it was specific. But I was ready because I had just gone to Greece and I'd seen all these rectangle cut stones from 3,000 years before that I had taken a lot of pictures of, and I knew what I was going to do. So it was sort of like the universe had given me a tutorial on how to do this. And so we began the project, and the guys had another guy come along named Ernesto, and he had just come over from the desert, basically. And he was so sweet. He had a really, really deep, deep voice. And I loved his voice. And I just asked him stuff. He couldn't speak English at all, but I just wanted to hear him talk. But the job started, and the clients were pretty nice. And they didn't really talk to us much because I was told not to speak to the client. And, you know, that's kind of a weird juxtaposition, because if somebody asks you a question, like, you feel like you should be able to answer it. And so there was a little bit of weirdness going on around that. And I don't know, I started just getting a feeling from the general contractor that, it was more like she really needed me to just do every single little thing that she had on her agenda. And I mean, this is my skill set, and this is the things that I know. And so there were some things that were coming up that were kind of disturbing, and I just had to deal with it and go with it. And so it kind of created some friction between us, which I regret because, sometimes you can see through things, and I'm as transparent as I can be, and I just wish other people would be that way. And sometimes it's just not going to be. And so I had to learn how to work around these issues. And so the job was a very, very intense on, but fortunately these guys were on at 7 o'clock in the morning. They got there at 7. I got there around 8. I said, I'm not doing that. Y'all can get there at 7, but not me. I'm sorry. I've paid my dues. I don't even like to get there at 8. I don't like to disturb people in the morning. I like to give people a little bit of time before you show up and start, sawing and shit. But it was okay. But we were on that project for probably around 9 weeks, and it was massive, and it was beautiful, and it was a lot of learning on that, a lot of learning curve for all of us. And but I watched these guys, and one of the guys' wives would bring food every day. She would prepare a big lunch and bring this, and they would sit in the back of one of the trucks down on the street and have food. And one day, they would make me a plate here and there, and it was just excellent. And I had never had Guatemalan food before, but it was really good. And they were, it was just a very sweet situation, and I appreciated it, and I really loved these guys, and I was happy that the universe had brought them to me, because I would have been on that job by myself for probably, months. But in the meantime, I had a conversation going with Rosa on a daily basis. We would text and call each other, and so I felt like we were sort of building something, and there was an attraction there. And so we were kind of excited that we were going to get to see each other in October. And my friend Lisa Labalita had volunteered to get us 2 rooms at this hotel, a nicer hotel in Atlanta, because the place where Esther was going to be was not that great. And from what Lisa said, and I said, oh, sure. And Maria was going to come with Rosa on the trip, and so that was going to be the plan. But last minute, I think Maria got sick and Rosa came by herself, so we got rid of one of the rooms, and we ended up staying together, and it was fine. And we went to the Esther Hicks Abraham, and if you don't know who that is, you just kind of have to look it up. It's hard for me to explain. I had learned of Esther Hicks back in the 80s. And I followed the teachings of Abraham, which is basically an entity, a collective consciousness that comes through Esther. It sounds so woo-woo, and it is, but I'm telling you, there is so much truth behind this, I can't even tell you. And I was not ready for it in the 80s because I couldn't understand. I could understand it to a degree, but I couldn't get it on the level of the quantum physics level of vibration, and how, we are all energy, and we are all vibrating at a certain level. And whatever vibration we're sending out there is basically what we're going to keep getting back in our lives. And so I had just sort of like over the last couple of years, sort of started dabbling back into this because it kept coming up. I kept seeing things and hearing things, and I'm like, maybe I need to do a deep dive into this Esther Hicks thing. And so going in person, I had never done before, and Rosa had never seen her in person either, and neither had Lisa. And so we went, and it was absolutely vibrant. It was, you could feel the energy. There were, who knows how many people, maybe 1,000, I don't know. It was a really big ballroom in a Marriott downtown Atlanta. And it was absolutely, you sit and you listen to every single word. You can hear a pin drop. People are so attentive. Nobody's on their phones. And maybe it's a cult. I don't know. But honey, I love it. I love that cult. And it really helps me a lot. It's pure positive energy. It's pure positive, reasoning. And it's very simple because it's all about feeling good. It's all about getting out in front of the negative bullshit that we all can wake up with, and I especially can wake up with some horrible thinking and some horrible dread of my day. And, I've had to really work on that for many years to be able to accept and just stay in the moment with what I have in front of me. And mainly because of the physicality of it. It's a physical thing, and I talk about it a lot of how I have to maintain myself so that I can go do these things. If I didn't maintain myself the way that I do, there's no way I would make it 8 to 10 hours a day on this. And, I've had some friends that I've actually worked for that have kind of helped me a little bit here and there, and they just look at me like, how in the hell do you do this? And I'm like, I don't know. There's something inside of me that just drives me that helps me to do this. It's not even me. It's some other form of something that comes through me that gives me the strength to carry on, I guess. And maybe it's the God of endurance. I don't know. But, having a communication with Rosa, and I felt like we were starting to build a relationship. It was fun and it was exciting to talk about, travel, and because that was her thing, is she was going to travel and take groups of people all over the place, and I was going to get to go. And it was so weird though. And I had told her the Helena Grease story because I said, this is weird. Because that was the thing that I was going to do with Helena Grease, the entity of air that was a nobody. But anyway, and when that balloon was burst, that was what was so devastating because I was so looking forward to. And now it was like, okay, well, did I manifest this? Like, who manifested who? Did you manifest me? Did I manifest you? I don't know, but here we are. And so, one of the things that after October, December was going to come and my birthday was coming and all the Greek trip girls were going to have a kind of reunion dinner in Asbury Park. And so I was going to go up to New York for my birthday, actually the week before my birthday, and spend with Rosa and go see all the people from the trip on a dinner. Some of them couldn't make it, but some of them could. And she had gotten tickets to this King Tut exhibit, and that just really excited me because, she kind of gave me a little list of choices of things, and I was like, oh, yeah, and I know it seems kind of nerdy, but that kind of stuff just intrigues me. So I felt that's very thoughtful of her because she probably didn't care anything about that. I don't know. Maybe she did, but I felt like it was sweet that she put that on the table as a choice. And so we were going to go to that, and we did. And one of the things that happened when we got there was we were going in and we were going to go to the restroom, and a security guy followed us and he kept saying, wait, wait, wait. And we were like, what? And he said, that's for women. And we kind of looked at him and he thought I was a guy. And I was just really, I mean, I don't know, like, if I'm in denial, but I don't feel like I really look that manly, but whatever. And so we were kind of like, oh. And so we didn't, I don't know, I think it kind of embarrassed Rosa a little bit. I don't know. And I was embarrassed, but that was just a little snag that made me feel pretty uncomfortable because I've always been very self-conscious about that stuff, and I think it all goes back to my size, this I'm tall, I've got broad shoulders, I'm really strong and my hands are big, my feet are big. And so I just felt it brought up some of that insecurity, and I just had to shut it down. You know, it's like, Jill, don't even go there. But we had a really, really great time. We walked around the city. We went to Rockefeller Center. We did those things that I had been wanting to do since I was a kid, and I had just seen Christmas on TV in New York City. So to really get to experience this was just, it was something I had always kind of dreamed about. And I had had a dream several months before. I had dreamed that I had walked into this huge cathedral. And when I walked in, I mean, on the outside, I saw the whole thing, the ornate carvings in the stone, and it looked like something like you'd see in Europe or something. But when I walked into this cathedral, I looked over to the right, and Rosa was sitting on these benches, and there was like red velvet. You know how they have like red velvet kind of cushions, and seemed like red velvet was sort of in throughout this cathedral and stuff. So I had dreamed about this. And so we're walking around, and I stopped dead in the street and looked up, and I said, oh my God. She's like, what? And I said, that's the cathedral that was in my dream. And it was St. Philip's Cathedral. And so she's like, really? And so we went in and we sat down and we listened. There was a priest up there talking, I think, and we kind of listened for a little bit. And then, you know, but we, it was just real interesting how, I don't know why I see the things I do in my mind sometimes. I don't know if I'm clairvoyant or I have some kind of something. It doesn't matter, but I do try to honor it and value it. But we had a really good time walking around. It was crowded. It was the energy of it. It was a lot of fun. We had great food, and then, you know, I got to meet some of her friends, and then we ended up going to Asbury Park and meet with all the girls from the Greek trip, and we stayed in this bed and breakfast called the Majestic, I think, and it was on the water, and it was really, really beautiful, and we had a great night there, and then we ended up going to Atlantic Highlands to visit some other friends. So there was a lot of introductions, and, you know, I, being not the social creature, it was time for me to step up, and I did it, you know, and there were times when I couldn't hear, and I couldn't hear from all the restaurant would be super loud, or there would be people kind of talking over each other, and it was just really different, you know, and I'm not used to it. It's more of a, I guess, a northern thing of, you know, and a lot of these girls maybe are from Italian descent. You know, Rosa's parents were both from Italy, and she grew up in Brooklyn, and it's a lifestyle, and it's fun, and it's fast, and it's energetic, and, you know, it was something that I was learning to adapt to, and I knew that, you know, I'm a good observer, and I don't have to talk, I don't have to, you know, be the center of attention. I don't really choose to be. I just sort of take things in. And but I felt bad because people would ask me a question and I couldn't really hear to answer them back. And somebody else would be going, I've got a dog, and showing me their phone. And, you know, so it was real stimulating. And it's kind of funny, you know, when I look back on it, I laugh because it was just sort of funny. So that was a great trip, and then I came back, and then Rosa actually came down to Asheville quick for a quick trip in between Christmas and New Year's, and, you know, met a few people, and we got to go around. But New Year's Eve was a very interesting event, and I had just, I don't even know why, but I was in the shower, and that's when I get a lot of my ideas. I don't know why, but they come through the shower, and it was about the light center, and I had not been up to the light center in Black Mountain in years, and, you know, it's this, where this geodesic dome sits out in the woods, and it was a group that had come through the Shenandoah, the Shenandoah Valley, dowsing for energy back in the 70s, and they came upon this spot, and it's a very, it's near the Eastern Continental Divide, so it's a very energetic spot. That's all I know. I don't know all the physics about it or anything, but every time I've gone there, I've usually had an experience, but I wanted to do something. When she came to Asheville, I didn't want to do a bunch of things that I don't normally do. Like, I didn't, everybody's like, are you going to take her to the Biltmore House? Are you going to take her to the Grove Park Inn? And it's like, I don't hang out at those places. And I need to be authentic here, and I need to show her my world. And I'm not going to take her to places that I don't go to. That would be kind of weird. And so I chose this because it was something that it would just be interesting. I don't know. And if she was truly on the same page as me with her spiritual journey or the quest, then she would be open to it. And so I mentioned it to her, and she's like, yeah, it sounds fine. And so we went to a good dinner at this place in Black Mountain, called, I think it was called Pure and Proper, or I can't remember, but it was good. And then we went on, and it was pretty hilarious because we're going down these, like, on a dirt road in the dark, in the night, and it was cold. And we come upon this geodesic dome that had some lights on, and this older man comes out, and he was like, come on in. And so we go up these steps, and we walk into the chamber upstairs. And there were maybe like six or seven people. I don't quite recall, but we sat in a circle, and then they had a Zoom screen because at this point, COVID was still happening, and a lot of people weren't coming out because of COVID. But I think people had gotten kind of spoiled to be able to stay home and to not have to go out, And so they pulled the screen up, and it had about 12 people on the screen, more people on the screen that were actually in person. And that was a little bit annoying because you know how you get like glitches or freezes on the screen. And so that would sort of stop this process. But it was basically going to be an end of the year, New Year's Eve sort of meditation. And so we did some meditations, we did some visualizations, and at one point, I heard Rosa snoring, and I was like, uh-oh. She sort of laughed, and I sort of laughed because I started dozing off too. But it was really sweet. The people were very, very nice to us. And so that was, bringing in the new year. And I was just happy to be with Rosa. I wasn't caring if we went anywhere or not. I just, when you like somebody, you just want to be in their presence and have, be in that energy, and that was really what was important. So from there, we had a lot of time together during December, January, and then I went down to Florida and met her down in Florida, and she has a condo down there, and we spent a week down there, and it was great because it was probably in the 60s, 70s. It was warm, and we ended up just really relaxing, walking a lot, and I met two of her friends there, Dominique and Don, and they were just super nice, and I really, really, really liked them. And I was excited to be becoming friends with her and with Rosa and her friends, and I felt like, this was opening up a world that I had kind of longed for because, in my past relationship, we had gotten so isolated that we didn't have a whole lot of people in our lives, and we had people as acquaintances, but we didn't have a lot of close friends as a couple. And sometimes, that can be tricky if one person has friends and the other doesn't, or vice versa. So this felt like I felt like I was being invited into a world that I wanted to be in, and it felt good. Like, it felt comfortable. It didn't feel weird, and they were very down to earth, successful, nice, funny people. And humor is so important. Jesus, humor is one of the biggest things in my life that without the humor, I don't know if I could continue this. I don't know if I could continue being here because the humor is what keeps me going a lot of times. And so those were some great times, and then back to work. And fortunately, it was kind of mid-January when I got back to Asheville, and I had promised a woman from actually that had gone to my high school, And her and her husband, and they had a little house in Little Switzerland, North Carolina, which was kind of a high elevation. They wanted an indoor fireplace, and so we had worked out a deal where I was going to come up and stay in their place because they were still living in Atlanta, and I could bring Minnie, my little Shih Tzu, with me and do this project. And so I ended up going there, and she wanted to do something that had some Greek influence, and she had followed me on Facebook through my Greece trip, and she really, really had a lot of infatuation with Greece, and she wasn't quite sure either what her draw was. Maybe she felt like she had been there in a past life or something. So I worked on that. I did this beautiful fireplace. I really loved it, and I was so happy that they just let me do what came out of me, and it was absolutely breathtaking, beautiful. And I did it with these large river stones, and most round, and they were different colors. There were pinks and whites and grays, and it was just really nice. And it had these little grotto kind of cave looking shelves over the mantle where you could put things, little statues in it or something. And so it was so great. I loved it. And we got snowed in. Minnie and I got snowed in. A blizzard hit up there, and that made it even more fun, because nobody was around. You would just hear the wind blowing and the snow blowing. And so that was a great way to just kind of get grounded. And my nephew actually came, he came up on a day or so and helped me lift a couple of these big, huge pieces. And that was great to have him around. And then, here comes February, and I go back to New York to go for Valentine's Day, actually, to go spend with Rosa. And we stayed up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And that was a very, I really love that part of New York. I'd never been there and seen it on TV, and there's Central Park. And we walked around, we did a lot of things in the city. And we went and saw Book of Mormon, that play, which I had kind of wanted to see. I had no idea that it was written by the South Park creators. And so it was pretty raunchy. It had a good message, and I liked it. I wouldn't say it was like the greatest play I've ever seen or anything like that, but it was a very good show. And so Rosa and I, there were a couple of moments where there were a couple of issues that came up, and I felt like I was kind of being put in the middle of etiquette, and I wasn't sure exactly what I was doing or not doing, but she had pointed out a few things about, me walking in front of her or some things like that. And so I was trying to be really attentive to that kind of stuff because, I'm not a man, and I don't treat a female like I'm a man. And I don't know. There's some things like that that I had never really discussed with anybody, but I was open to it, and I was open to listening to her feedback about that. So I got back down to Asheville, and I was going to work at Janet and Don's again, which has been a great experience because I love them and we laugh a lot. And before, the spring, I told them, I said, listen, y'all, if I don't get this done, I'm not going to be able to come back here, because they live in Shelby, which is, about an hour and 15 away from me. And I was doing these terrace walls out behind their house, and they had all this existing stone. And I said, look, let's just knock this out before spring comes. And also, Rosa had invited me to go to Italy. And, this was going to be a huge deal because I had never been to Italy, and it was going to be, I think we were going to go for around 2 weeks and then come back to the States. And I was going to stay another week because Maggie, she had co-written a film with a guy in college, and the film was called Joyland. And this film had been going to all these different film festivals, Sundance and TIFF and Cannes, and Pakistan, I think, was submitting this film to the Oscars, and this was a big deal. And the opening was going to be on a Friday in New York City at Film Forum. And so I told Rosa, I said, I really want to go to this. And so we had booked a place to stay. And so I got, to Janet and Don's, and I'm working, terracing, 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 walls, walls, walls. And this was a lot of work. And so that was happening, and life was good. I really felt like I had something to look forward to, and I just couldn't believe that all of this had transpired because of, I mean, if you really want to think about it, if you really want to trace it, you can backtrack this whole thing. When my friend Andrea told me, Jill, just get on fucking Bumble, all the way back to that, it was like, if I hadn't have got on Bumble and I hadn't have chosen Helena Grease as this person, then none of this would have come into action. It's so odd if you backtrack it. And then, of course, I'd spoken to my friend Eva, and she says, well, really, it's because of me. And it really is because, the night I got home and after my friend said, get on fucking Bumble, and I was like, I'm not doing that. And then ding, Eva dinged me and said, when do you want to have ice cream? And that's when I just got on Bumble, because all I kept hearing was my friend Andrea say, you need a distraction. You've got to get a distraction to get your mind off of this. So, sometimes in life, if you go backtrack the breadcrumbs of how you got where you got, I had sort of, I guess, created this somehow. And now I have this beautiful Italian woman in my life who seems to like me. And, I'm going to get to go to Italy and meet her family. And I was so excited. It was like things were opening up for me that never in my wildest dreams I thought would. And I was very excited to remove myself from the humdrum, rock-hitting, day-after-day grind that had been going on for so long. And, I had put some money away so that I could go travel, and I was very, very excited that this was going to happen. And, it was like, what's it going to be like? And I would think about it and daydream about it. And I would go to sleep at night, and I would just say, thank you, God, thank you, Rosa, thank you, Helena Grease. And I would thank these entities, because I don't know how I got there, but all I knew is it's like trusting the inner guidance. We all have that inner guidance system. We have an inner navigational system that will guide us if we just trust it. And learning to trust that small, still voice has been a lifetime of process for me. And it's been a lifetime of trial and error, because sometimes maybe it's not my inner guidance. Sometimes maybe it's my ego, or it's another part of me that wants to destroy me. It could be that great saboteur that's in there saying, oh, just do this. And then it becomes a disaster. I don't know. I don't know how it all works. But all I do know is that if I feel good, and I'm working on feeling good and trying to keep myself at ease, then things seem to flow more smoothly.
Hammered is recorded and produced in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. It's narrated by Jill Haney, produced by Jill Haney, and with sound design, editing, and music by Alexander Rodriguez. Our beautiful artwork was created by Lauren Caddick, and we'd like to send a special thanks out there to Minnie and Robin. You can check out our website, podcasthammer.com, and follow us on social media for updates.